Okay, so yeah, she's really good. She's right on top. Okay, the we're supposed to be talking about multiple truths, or the more than one truth, stuff like that. So obviously, we're going to talk about it in the term in the.
Define what that means.
Well, yeah, I'm really not a postmodernist. I really believe that. I don't think all of Western civilization has to be held hostage to what a bunch of like crazy Frenchmen decided to foist on the rest of the world. If you look at crazy people like Foucault and stuff, and this is total Epicurus coming from an academic, I don't get it. I mean, I don't, you know, just because, I mean, it's bad enough that our clothing is dictated by a cabal of Frenchmen in a room deciding what we're going to buy and what we're going to wear. But they're going to decide what we're going to think also. What? Look at if it was Italians, I'd be much happier.
Really?
Me in Italy? What are you talking about? Anyways, but the point is that I.
What is your connection to Italy?
My connection to Italy. I started. I mean, it's going to sound a little bit like Twilight Zone. When I was looking for a doctoral topic, I originally specialized in classical Ashkenaz French and France and Germany. And when I was looking for a topic, I decided for all kinds of reasons that I didn't want to, continue there. I wanted to see where the Ashkenazim went. So that actually left three places. One was Germany, one was Poland, and one was Italy. And Poland, I had no desire to learn Polish. It was that simple. That was into that. I mean, I already spoke Yiddish, but anyway. And Germany, I was advised against because there were a few scholars who had sort of like monopolized all the relevant material. And Italy was wide open. So by accident, but there are no accidents. So when I was on my honeymoon, actually, I was introduced to the person who would become my mentor in Italian Jewish history, Professor Ruben Bonfil. And he suggested a topic and I ran with it. As it happened, once I started doing the research, I literally fell in love with the history of Jews in Italy. It was like entrancing. And then, this is really the weird part. The weird part is that I finished my doctorate in 1991. In 1998, for all kinds of reasons, I decided to take a break. I took a 6-month break from doing pure research, and I really got into genealogy. And it turned out that my family, it turns out, had spent a lot of time in Italy. Raga gets weirder. It turns out that I'm a direct descendant of the person about whom I wrote my doctorate.
Oh!
There you go. That was totally bizarre. Like I said, and I'm a Litvak. Like, I don't go for this stuff usually, but do. Anyways, so, and since then, I, you know, it's an area which is, and it's also, from all kinds of points of view, it's interesting and it's multifaceted. You saw some of the stuff that I showed you. There aren't a lot of people in the field. And the truth is, the people are nice. I mean, and the Italians are nice, and I love speaking Italian, so it's like it worked out. You know, it worked out nicely.
My brother was Italian.
Really? From what? From where?
From
Italy. Ah, yes. As happened, and my wife has not originally. My wife.
I don't know where his family originally is.
Well, he's either Ashkenazi, Italiani, originally Italian, or Libyan. Those are the three major components of the.
So
he's probably from. He's probably Ashkenazi. Anyways, so that's how that happened. Anyways, when we talk about, so I don't, like, I believe that there's one truth. I don't think you have to accept everything that the postmoderns say. And especially since postmodernism is deeply, deeply rooted in Marxist ideology. And since I'm far from a Marxist, I don't feel myself bound to it. But when you talk about truth, there's all different ways of looking at it. Look, a person of faith, I think, has got to somewhere in their life, assume that there's a truth outside of them, which obliges them. One of the reasons I think that that people don't want to say there's any truth is because if there's no truth, there's nothing that's obligatory. I can do whatever I want. That's why absolute autonomy and anarchy go together with postmodernism, because there's nothing binding on you. You know, the Torah assumes that there's God, and God creates the world outside of time. And God exists outside of time, and He creates the world, and He is the source of all truth, and we're beholden to Him. The question, on that level, you know, it's either right or it's not right. It's called binary logic. It's or N logic. It's either A or it's not A. At the same time, as we'll see, that doesn't mean that there's always only one answer to any given question, and that multiple options can, legitimate options can exist within the same framework. We'll see how that can work. In halacha, it certainly works that way. Although, what spin you put on it will change from, actually, I'm going to argue, between Sfaradim and Ashkenazim. In terms of other religions, the truth of the matter is, halacha lemaisa, we assume that there are religions that are wrong, like, you know, Hinduism or Buddhism or religions that are real avodah zarah. I know people will argue now that Hinduism is not avodah zarah. I question that argument. When it comes to Islam and Christianity, of course, Judaism has a two-level system, right? You have 613 mitzvahs for Jews, and then you have seven mitzvahs for goyim. So it's possible if another faith recognizes the one God and more or less and adheres to the Shavuot Mitzvah B'nai Noach, those are not pagan. That's not a Avodah Zarah. Whether those person will have a Chelik L'Olam Haba depends on how you define a Ger Tosha. But it's a sort of a different kind of thing. The general trend today is to say that Islam is a monotheistic religion, and that it more or less adheres to the Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach. Christianity is a question. The overwhelming majority of poskim, the Rama and others, argue that it is, it more or less abides by the Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach. And by extension, it's true to the degree that it fits within the framework that Judaism, that the Torah provides. It's no less true than our path, which is harder and more fraught and more with more obligations, but it leads to the same place. The question comes up in terms of machlok. I mean, really, the question of one truth or multiple truths in the stuff that we talk about here is a question of machloket. How can you have machloket? Since that's what Jews like to do anyways, it's their favorite occupation. So that's what I want to take a look at. I want to take a look at how the two schools of approach of how, you know, you live in a, of how you, of how we deal with the problem of machloket, and what does that mean, and is there more than one halachic truth or not? And how would you determine, therefore, we talked about this earlier in the year, how would you determine which way to go? One thing I will tell you is that it's really ironic, but supposedly postmodernism, everybody's right, you're right, I'm right, the other one's right, but by the same token, because of, I think, the superficiality of the internet world, we've gone back to being all or nothing. Is it this or it's that? You're this or it's that. I mean, everything is very, very binary, despite the fact it's supposed to be the internet and the information highway is supposed to actually have broadened and liberated. But you listen to the way people talk, there's no room for nuance. There's absolutely no room for nuance. You are either Democrat or you're Republican. You should die, or you have a right to live. And it gets to be even crazy. It's all or nothing. I wish I had a buck forever. I mean, it happened right over here. 20 years ago, a student of mine came up to me, and we were talking after class, and she says to me, you know, I'm no longer religious. I said, okay, how come? She says, I couldn't do it anymore. I said, okay. I said, let me ask you a question. How are you not religious? You're not Shomer Shabbos anymore? Of course I'm Shomer Shabbos. So you don't keep kosher? Of course I keep kosher. You eat chametz on Pesach? Chalila. So I said, so what is it that makes you not religious? I wear pants. You have to understand that. In Israel, the question of the uniform you wear becomes as important as anything else. So it's also another part of this all or nothing thing.
It's the cabal of
friendship. But there's all, on the other hand, I have a friend. I mean, it works the other way too. I have a friend who is a really very well-known, I won't mention names, but she's a very well-known public intellectual. She was a member of Knesset for a while, and she's known particularly for the fact that she loves to learn Gemara. She's like, Her first opening speech in the Knesset, she gave a Gemara Shir in the Knesset. And she's absolutely, absolutely chiloni. And she once told me, as an aside, a long, long time ago, that at one point in her life, she was thinking about lighting candles Erev Shabbos, because she had daughters and whatever, and she decided not to. So I said, I'll bite. Why did you not decide not to? So she told me because she's afraid, she was concerned that if she started to do that, her friends would tag her as a Chozeret B'tshuva. So, I mean, so this cuts both ways. It's sort of binary thinking. It's very common in Israel. It's not that uncommon in America either, although there is a little bit less. You have a little more of a stretch of what's acceptable and what's not. Let's put postmodernism away for a minute. There's a professor here at Bar-Ilan, who's a very fine scholar of Milton, who wrote a book called The Last Rabbi, Professor Bill Kohlbrenner. And he argued, what?
The Last Rabbi?
Reb Soloveitchik. He claims Reb Soloveitchik was a postmodernist. And that's his argument. I mean, you can argue either way. But I disagree with that also. But let's... I don't think he wasn't the last rabbi, and he also wasn't the postmodernist in that sense. But all right, because he really believed that words have meaning, and I can communicate to you what I think, and you can understand more or less what I'm intending, even though we all put a little spin on it differently. Okay, let's learn. That's enough with the talking around. The point of departure on the question of machloket, which around which all of this is going to revolve, is the famous Gemara that they like to pull out and scream. Amar Rabbi Abba Amar Shmuel. Shalosh shanim nechleku beit Shammai ubeit Hillel. They fought for 3 years. They fought for a lot more than 3 years, but all right. Halalu amrim halacha kemotenu. Valalu amrim halacha kemotenu. Yatza'a bat kol v'amra. Elu ve'elu divrei elokim chayim hei. You're both right. Both in these are the words of the living God. Valacha kebeit Hillel. But we paskin like beit Hillel. The Gemara asks, "V'chimei achar she'elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim mipnei mazachu beit Hillel lekboa halacha kamotan?" So why? What did they, since they're both equally valid in terms of Torah? What? Why did Beit Hillel win out? Mipnei she'inochin baluvim. Hey, they were nice people. They were easygoing. They were willing to listen to. They were willing to forego their covet. V'shonim divrei hen v'divrei shvei shamayim. When they would teach, they would quote Beit Shammai, and they would quote themselves. Not only that, v'lo od shele ele shemakdimim divrei shamayim l'divrei hem. All Mishnayos, which were written as part of Beit Hillel, right? Because Rabbi Yehuda Nasi was the descendant of Hillel, right? So they always quote Beit Shammai first and Beit Hillel second. Okay. Yeah.
Why does that nature? The
moral stature, of their moral fabric, of their moral, here's a word I can't stand, but inclusiveness. Okay? Look at the irony here. First of all, the Yatza Batko. This is the problem, the fact that it's a heavenly voice that determines this is really interesting by itself, because generally the general trend in the Gemara is what the divine intervention does not decide these things. That's another issue. Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim hein. These are both the words of the living God. V'alacha kebeit Hillel. But we come down on one side. What does that mean? Does that mean there's more than one truth? Does that mean there's more than one truth, but sometimes you have to come down on one side or the other? So it's a practical thing when you're paskin. What's the status of the words of Beit Hillel of Beit Shammai b'zman hazeh? It's an irony by itself, and that's what's going to occupy ourselves. How does that work? Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. On the other hand, one thing that this together with Prosbul is one of the most. Oh no. There are three passages in rabbinic literature which I think in contemporary, especially American, but not just, Jewish parlance, are the most abused passages in public debate. One is Tikkun Olam, God help us. Two, which is basically, no, it's a Democratic Party platform with a yarmulke. Okay, one is Tikkun Olam. By the way, the expression is Tikkun Olam b'malchut Shaddai. That goes together. Tikkun Olam. Number two is, the rabbis can do anything they want. Look at Prosbul, which is also a red herring. And the third one is this: Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. This is in passages interpreted to mean anything goes, because elu ve'elu, we have to be pluralist. Wrong. There are certain opinions which can be of divrei Elokim chayim, and certain opinions not. If I said Beit Shammai says Aleph, and Beis Hillel says something else, and Elisha ben Avoyim says 3, and Jesus of Nazareth says 4, I think it'd be pretty clear that you wouldn't say Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. There are, in other words, there are, doesn't, Elu ve'elu is not an open, it, the passage has been taken out of context to justify any position because somebody said so. Now that's a specifically postmodern position. I said it, so therefore it's right. There's a wonderful book that my son made me read by a guy named Mike Nichols, called The Death of Expertise, where we just reject all of the experts because anybody can ask Dr. Google, Rabbi Google, Professor Google, Google RN or whatever the case might be and get all the answers.
Yeah, there's a couple of people like, well, I'm not going to have a job in 5 years, but it's okay.
No, I think experts are going to come back. Anyways, and then, no, see, experts can also be arrogant, can be dictatorial too. I mean, that you have to have a certain amount of, when I give that book to somebody to read, there's an article that was just published that I posted actually on Facebook called The Need for Intellectual Humility, which is also, anyway, how does it work? So basically there are two lines of explanation about what does Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim mean. One, the first expression of it that I've been able to find was in the 10th century. Rav Sadia Gaon comes up with it. And it seems to me that it tends to characterize all of Gaonei Bavel and also Chachmei Sfarad almost all the way down to today. I don't have any I don't know no proof of it existing beforehand, but at least I know from the time of Rasag on. This is what the argument. So in the beginning of Sefer Emunot B'Deyot, which is a philosophical book, in the introduction he says as follows. He's wondering about the question, how come there are so many different opinions about all kinds of things? If there's one truth, and he assumes that there's one truth, something can either be right or wrong, so how come there's so many different answers? V'amru chachmei Yisrael, b'mi shelo hishlim yenei ha'chokhma. Says those people who were not fully trained, they didn't finish their training. They didn't do their homework. They didn't pass their psychometrics. They didn't pass their exams. But they have they got a beginner's education, but didn't follow through. They said regard such people misherabu talmidei shamai vehillel shaloshim shu kol tzarchan rabu hamachlokot. The Gemara in Sanhedrin. That once the Gemara says that once there were many Hillel and Shammai had too many students who didn't do their homework and didn't service and didn't do their stage or their internship or whatever with Hillel and Shammai sufficiently. Once that happened, there were more machlokot. In other words, there was very few machlokot of serious import. Until the time of Shammai and Hillel themselves at the turn of the millennium, first millennium. But once the students stopped doing their homework, once they got lazy, right, so arrogant also, and they didn't get the method, they weren't properly trained and they went off on their own. Death of expertise, right? That's when machloket starts. And machloket, there is one truth, says Rasag. But when people are sloppy and they don't think carefully and they don't do their homework and they don't put in the work that's supposed to happen, they're not going to end. They're going to end up taking a wrong turn. And the further off you go on a wrong turn, you're going to end up going the wrong direction. Ask any guy who ever tried to not ask directions. Okay? V'lamadnu mizeh, says Rasag. Ki atalmidim kishehem mashlimim alimud. If they really had done their homework, lo tiyeh b'nehem machloket v'lo irbub. There'll be no confusion and there won't be any machloket. Al kain al yeshiva ksilat o haketz chato. So therefore, if a person looks at the halacha and he sees there's so many machlokot, idiots—he's talking about karaites—idiots should not, or fools should not impute chato al aboreid barachu tatov. Don't impute the fact that God gave all kinds of contradictory stuff because there's only one God, one Torah, one truth. If there is machloket, it's because we screwed up. It's because we messed up. Somebody along the line started not doing his homework. All you need is one generation to mess up and you're already lost. Because the other ones are passing on all these multiple options, most of them are wrong. They were lazy. So because of that, there's all kinds of doubts and all kinds of questions and so on and so forth. Kilo yitachen. Okay, basically we're saying that's not possible that God is going to give more than one truth. So if there's more than one truth, we messed up. We got the Torah, like, and we messed up. If there's a machlok, it's our fault. Meaning, elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim would mean, according to that, v'alacha ke'beit Hillel, that both Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel tried their best. They were best, they were well-intentioned. They both functioned within the rules of interpretation and psak and so on that everybody agreed on. But one is right and one is wrong. And in this case, Beit Hillel is right. In the absence, and in, so if you want to extend that to future generations, in the absence of, you have machloket, in the absence, in the presence of any halachic debate, every single, on any side of an issue, one is right and one is wrong. But I don't have bat kol coming out every day and telling me which way to go. So I got to do the best I can and respect the intellectual and the religious integrity of whoever comes up with an opinion. But at one point, I've got to try to figure out what's the right answer. The one who takes the ball on this is the Rambam. He does this in a number of places, but I want to take a look at two classic discussions. First, in the Mor Nevuchim, of all places, in the Mor Nevuchim, in the first chapter, in the first section of the Mor Nevuchim is divided into three parts, chapter 71, he says as follows, Da. And the Rambam waves, says, Da, it's a red flag. This is something, I'm telling you something important, far more dramatic than what the Prime Minister said last night. Da. Ki ha-chokhmot ha-rabot asher hayu be'umateinu b'amitat elu ha-anyanim. He assumes that philosophy me'az u'me'olam was an integral part of Torah. For whatever reason, it's not important right now. He said that those chokhmot were part of our tradition, were part of our revelation. However, avdu ba'orech hazman, they got lost over time. Especially since, u'vishlot ha-umot ha-skalot aleinu, especially because we've been ruled by ignorant nations whose oppression led to intellectual decline. One of the reasons why this was especially egregious when it comes to the scientific philosophical tradition that was part of Torah that he assumes existed. This is especially the case because not everybody was allowed to learn philosophy. Nobody can deal with it. As opposed to Chumash and Gemara and Halacha, which is open to everybody. The Rambam says, of all intelligences, men, women, children, whoever it is, that's available to everyone. Philosophy wasn't. V'lo haya hadavar mutar levnei adam kulam, ela divrei asfarim bilvad. Furthermore, the whole thing was oral. The Torah Shabbat, which the Rambam assumes that the philosophical tradition, which he later writes down, was part of the Torah Shabbat Peh. So it's got triple whammy. So first of all, the circumstances did not encourage intellectual achievement. Second of all, we were oppressed. Third of all, not everybody got to learn all this stuff. Fourth of all, it was oral, so that if the few people who were exposed, you know, if one guy walks around with the entire tradition of a community and then you kill him, what's the name of that book? The Giver?
Yeah,
it's like The Giver. I mean, The Giver is a terrible book, but I mean, it's a sad book, whatever. But it's like The Giver, right? Ukvar yadata. So now he lays the bombshell. Ukvar yadata. Shafilu a Talmud hamikubal lo aya mechubar b'sefer mikedem. It's true. Until like the 10th century, it was never written down. I mean, later, according to some. Okay. Li'inyan ha-mechai mitpashet ba'uma. He said that it wasn't written down. It wasn't spread around. Why? Devarim shamarti lecha al peh or al pi. Because the very sharp division between oral law and written law was maintained deep into the early Middle Ages. There's always a preference for knowing things by heart. He quotes Plato that it's better to write something on the live flesh of your heart than not on the dead skin of animals. If you have it in your head and you're thinking around, you're rolling it around, there's always this prejudice in favor of knowing things by heart, not being dependent on books. The truth of the matter is, you find this in, well, at the beginning of the last century, when my family was living in Meir Sharim, a cousin of mine told me that, you know, to have fine people that were walking around the new Gemara Rashi Tosfos, the whole Shas, there was like nothing. It was like, that was like, there were lots of people like that. In Yemen, for example, people, there were tons of people using Tanakh off by heart. That was part of their education. In fact, I think it was Yigael Yadin, the archaeologist, had a Taimani assistant And part of his job was, because you know Tanakh by heart, when they get to some site and they were excavating, and it looked like something he sort of remembered from Tanakh, he'd ask whatever his name was, I forgot already, and the guy would, you know, whatever the pasuk was. That was a way of learning. There were no books. I remember I was once teaching a Turo in New York, and I mentioned that there was a time that people would, that the text wasn't written. You just knew it out by heart, and that was it, which it requires a kind of knowing that's very different to us. But, and they started, these were a bunch of yeshiva guys. And they started screaming at me, God, can you say that? So I covered the word Svarim. I said, why do you think it's called Torah Shebal Peh? And you could have heard a pin drop. Like, it never occurred to anybody that it's called Torah Shebal Peh because it was oral. I mean, it's like, hello? Anyways, look how the Rambam goes. Then the Rambam goes on. That was really smart, keeping things oral. Because by keeping it oral, it prevented something happened later. What happened afterwards? There were many different opinions, and they dealt led to doubt, and they didn't see what the words meant, and then there were mistakes made. And as a result, there were arguments and machloket between people, and then they end up having everybody. Everybody ended up in different groups who disagreed with each other. And as a result, people used to pask in this way, when there's really only one truth. What does oral teaching and oral text do? Well, if it's oral, it means I can't get it on. No. Well, yeah. But it also means if it's oral, it means I can't get it from a book. It means I got to go to somebody who knows. And he will teach me Baal Peh. And while I'm teaching, studying, he'll make sure, as I'm studying from him, that I understand. Correct. And if I have a question about it, if I want to offer another interpretation, I can work it out with somebody who's more knowledgeable. There's a, it's really interesting that there was no interlinear commentary on the Gemara till Rashi. One began in the school of Rabbeinu Gershom Argola. All the commentaries before that were not interlinear the way Rashi has it, where he puts in all the, you know, tells you where the punctuation is and all kinds of other stuff. They're more summaries. And the question is, the Gaonim had a monopoly on the Gemara. Why didn't they publish a Perush? So there's a famous responsum. Show you this. By Rav Sar Shalom Gaon, in which he writes to somebody, wherever he is, and said, look, I really don't like to send you interpretations or commentaries on sugyas, because, look, if you were here, we could learn it together, and I could know what your problems are, what your questions are, you could ask immediately, and then once we're finished, I'll know you understand fully, and you go further, and there's no question. This way, I'm going to write to you, you'll listen to say what I said, it's really not, good way to go. But that also assumes, in general, like the Rambam says, that there's one truth, and as a result, you're either right or you're wrong. And machloket, by definition, is something bad. And elu ve'elu, divrei elokim chayim, by definition, is the best we can do. But it's not optimal. The Rambam, okay, so if you want to say maybe this is something he just, yes?
If you think there's only one truth, how do you, have any confidence in your own statements unless you are so sure of yourself.
First of all, you're working in a method which is accepted, and you do your absolute best to try to present an argument, and then in fact it'll be whether your opinion is accepted or not will be determined by everybody else. You have to end up vetting it. The obligation is to try your best. There's a theme that you find throughout Shoot. You find throughout this literature, Shelos and Chuvis, that poskim write that they really find themselves in the horn of a dilemma. On the one hand, they're afraid. First of all, you're presuming. You're being presumptuous enough to try to interpret God's word. On the other hand, and so who are you to do that? On the other hand, if you don't, I mean, the people need guidance. So which is it going to be? So the Torah requires that you take the chance. On the other hand, you got to do it with enough deference and enough Yirat Shemayim and enough caution to do it in a responsible fashion. Because, again, there's no bot call that's going to come out and tell you either way. That's the dilemma that the Posek has. That's actually called Yirat Hora'ah, fear of paskening. Fear of paskening is healthy. She took Hora'ah. Paralysis is not good. That's part of the issue.
There's only one truth. How is that not like totally paralyzing fear?
So we'll see what the Rambam says. So you'll do your best to try to aim at that truth. And it's not, in a lot of cases, it's not that hard because you have Klalim and you have an ever expanding tradition which is going to lead you in this direction, that direction. The Rambam says, take a look at the Rambam, says something similar, but he says in the Mishnah Torah, which is aimed for everybody, supposed to be Morin Nevuchim, which was only written for originally for his student, Yosef ben Yehuda. He writes in his introductory letter, L'chava l'domim l'cha, I'm writing it for you and those like you. At the end of the introduction to the Mishnah Torah, the Rambam says, U'bizman hazeh, takfu atzarot yiterot, takfu atzarot yiterot. Our geopolitical and social situation has been terrible. V'dachaka hasha'a et akol, means circumstances just pushed everything aside. V'avda chokhmat chachamim, uvinat nevonim nistara. L'fichach, אותם הפירושים וההלכות והתשובות שחיברו הגאונים after the חתימת התלמוד, וראו שהם דברים מבוארים, and they thought they were clear, נתקשו בימינו, we don't understand, ואין מבין ענייניהם כראוי אלא מעט במספר. ואין צריך לומר הגמרא, never mind the גאונים who wrote in Arabic, but never mind the Gemara, הבבלית והירושלמית בספרה, בספרי, בתוספתא, שהם צריכים דעת רחבה ונפש חכמה to understand. וזמן ארוך, ואחר כך יודע מהם הדרך הנכוחה בדברים האסורים והמותרים, ושאר דיני התורה היחו. In other words, the circumstances, again, lead to intellectual decline. ומפני זה, נערתי חצני, אני משה בן מימון הספרדי, ונשענתי על הצור ברוך הוא, ובינותי, I delved into all of these books, וראיתי לחבר דברים המתבררים מכל אלו החיבורים, בעניין האסור והמותר, התמי והטהור, עם שאר דיני התורה. כולם בלשון ברורה, שישיב אקססיבל, בדרך קצרה, כנל, עד שתהי תורה שבעל פה כולה סדורה בפי הכל, בלא קושה, בלא תירוק. I'm taking upon myself the responsibility of deciding, boom, this is what it is. לא זה אומר בקו, וזה בקו, not that this one says this, this one says that. There's only one truth, so I'm going to give the best I can to summarize it all up, so to take away all of the machloka, which I've already said is, which later on I'll say, is bad. אלה דברים ברורים, קרובים. קרובים in Hebrew, medieval Hebrew means reasonable. If something is rachok, it's unreasonable. If it's karov, because it's accessible, it means it's reasonable, which also means that, you know, that I'm putting this out as the absolute best that I can do, and Rambam wasn't the nobody, right? Nechonim doesn't mean necessarily just right. I'm sure he thought he was right also, but Nechonim also means established. Nechon, Menachon Yehar Beit Hashem, the mountain of God will be established on the mountains. Al pi ha-mishpat asher yitba'er, based on the method, based on the results, which suggest themselves, mikol elu ha-chiburim va-perushim nimtzaim mimot rasher rabbeinu vad achshav, ad shiu kulam kol adinim gluyim lakaton velagadol bedin kol mitzvah u-mitzvah uvedin kol advarim shiteknu chachamim u-neviim. Klalo shel davar, כדי שלא יהיה אדם צריך לחיבור אחר בעולם מדין בנידי ישראל, אלא יהיה החיבור הזה מקבץ לתורה שבעל פה, כולה עם התקנות והמנהגות בגזירות שנעשו, aside from the ad hoc legislation that developed. ועד חיבור הגמרא, כמו שפרשו לנו, so on and so forth, Sephardic. That's the Sephardic position. There's one truth, there's one way of going, result. Elu ve'elu means the best you can do. The Ritva, Rabbi Yontov ben Avram of Seville, who we'll see in a minute also had a great affinity for Ashkenazim, he writes in Ksubas, he says, he writes about a machloka between Atu Amoraim, I don't want to go into that. In the middle of the second line, it says, Ela elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim, these two opinions in the Gemara. Aval kisha'anu omrim sha'talmidim cholkim bedivrei rabotehem. When we see that students disagree about what their teachers said, ze'u merkach amar, ve'ze'u merkach amar, nireh dechad minayu meshaker. Again, this is an echo of what Rasag said about that by Talmidei Shammai Hillel. That if one of them, I mean, I don't think they were really like making it up, but they were lying. They're telling not the truth. It's the teacher said one thing or the other thing. If they both report opposite things, one of them is lying. O shachach kabbalato, or let's be more charitable, he forgot. But you can't say that, and you can't say that in the earlier situation. Okay. Similarly, interesting. Similarly, Maram Shif is a 19th century parshan. Parshan in actually, in, I think it's in Galicia. His stuff is his things are printed at the back of the Shas. Okay, he's not one of these. But he's not. And nowadays, he's not in the Lithuanian inspired yeshivas. He's not. It's really not the Brisker inspired yeshivas. It's not a place you usually go. But he's always got something interesting to say. So he writes as follows: Amara Ma'atik Harishon. He's talking about doing the two versions of the same book. Yanshin is the main lefanai kitvei akodesh de Rabbeinu Hamechaber bebeit nischot. I got two versions of the same author's book. Amarti latzik shtehen. I think I'm going to bring both of them. Kedei shelo yechsar hamezeg, because you know we shouldn't miss out. Vataha korei yidid Hashem, you the friend, beloved of God, reading this. Simencha v'libcha lechol echad. Read, look at both of them carefully. Ki elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim, kulam nitnu me'roe echad. The whole Torah was given by one God, therefore there's only one truth. Ah, you have two versions. Yan uviyan shteinu schaot miktivat yidei ha-mechaber. Since both of these books I'm quoting are autographs, ba'atzmo, v'nirin advarim ki elu echad mishtehen, masha shana b'madura kama, u'shnia b'madura batra. He says, people change their minds. In other words, again, you have the same guy writes two different things. There's not even, you can't accuse him of making up what he did. You have to also open the possibility that people change their minds as well, but not that both are right. Okay. Finally, okay. Fine. Yeah. Right. In the finally sum up, summarize this part of the discussion. The one of the great authors of the 18th, early 19th century among the Sephardim was Rabbi Chaim Yosef David Azulay, who was born in Hebron, and then he ended up in Livorno in Italy and stayed there, and then he brought his body back. He's considered something of not only of he wrote like 85,000 books or something.
What?
He knew everything. I think he had like 80 books or something, but Sfarim, not just books. He's called the Chidor, Birkei Yosef. He just wrote. It was amazing. He was like, he was a phenomenon. So anyways, so he, on the Gemara about Elu ve'Elu, writes as follows. The Efshar b'maydam rina b'samuch Elu ve'Elu divrei Elokim chayim. I'm going to explain what that means. U'pesher davar katvor mefarshim. And so some mefarshim said, Demashe katav, when it said Elu ve'Elu divrei Elokim chayim, ein perusho tishnehem emet. They're not both right. Ela liyot de'ein ha'or nikar ela mitocha choshech. Since the only way to know the truth, to know light, is by contrast with dark. Nimtzad asvara menageret to'ila vintov asvara ha'amitit. In other words, one opinion is right and one is wrong. But because contrast, it's actually true. If you contrast two things, you'll be able to understand the right one better. That's the reason why we maintain, that's why we study Beit Shammai, that's why we study Abaye against Rava and all this other stuff. Not because they're right, they're wrong. But by understanding the wrong side, you can understand the right side better. But again, it's either or. This is a classic Sephardic position. You want to skip down. There's one more text. So again, this is right down to the 18th, 19th century. Finally, in the Beit Yosef, Reb Yosef Karo, sitting in the 16th century in Adrianople, or Saloniki actually, after having been thrown out of Spain, he sits down to write his great summary of halacha up to his time, called the Beit Yosef, which he tags on to the tour. And he writes as follows. Vayehi ki archu lanu hayamim, horaknu mikli al kli. We were, as time goes on, we were thrown from vessel to vessel. Ubagola halachnu. You understand the trauma of Gerush Sfarad is like, it's like screaming out of these words. Vekamat sarot sruot chufot, but sarot zolo zo baolenu. It's endless, constant travails. Ad ki nitkayem banu, until we reach the, until it was fulfilled in us, v'avanotenu v'abda chochmat chachamav. The mirov tzarot, the wisdom disappeared. This again, it's a long line of the Rambam, who says that bad circumstances or adverse circumstances actually make people stupid. They lead to intellectual decline. Vazlat yom yad haTorah, and the capacity of the Torah declined. Velom deha, and of those of who studied it. Kilona seita Torah kebet Torot. Ela kitorot ein mispar. It's like endless number of Torahs. L'sibat rov ha'sfarim ha'nimtza'im b'viur mishpatei ha'medina. So many books. That was printing was just coming into play. But so many books and so many things and intellectual decline. There's like a million Torahs. That's a bad thing. That's a bad thing. So therefore, he set himself to do what? To make order. So if there's a machlokes in the Rosh and the Rambam and the Rif, he'll decide one way or the other way. But he's going to make order. And in fact, overwhelmingly, with exceptions, he with the function of Rabbi Yosef Karo, both in the Beit Yosef and the Shulchan Aruch, is to analyze and to sort of make seder. There should be one Torah. Torah Achas, Nidalet Am Echad. Yes, sir.
Then why is he writing the Beit Yosef to bring all the wrong, like...
Because he wants... Well, first of all, he's not to quote everybody. But he also will argue, in a lot of places, he'll point out why he decides between two different opinions, whatever the case might be. And he doesn't quote everybody.
But even he says sometimes,
And he's not consistent. And why he's not consistent is another issue. The more important thing is what's the basic premise which is driving him. Okay, so in other words, rather than let's deal with what's more common and what's the general trend or what's the general drive with him rather than the exception. And even if he brings more than one opinion, you see that his position is the same as everybody else up until now. That I can't decide, but that doesn't mean that one of them is not right and not wrong. Now, the wrong opinions are valid insofar as they were arrived at with the right method, but that doesn't mean not every right method leads to the right result. Ad Kan, by the way, just to throw this out, it's not perchance that all the major codes were written by Sfardim. The Rif, the Rambam, for our purposes, the Torah and the Shulchan Aruch. They aimed for Torah Achat, La'am Echad, uniformity, Kechol Shenitan. In fact, on the contrary, I mean, it's not really, really relevant to the issue right now, but very often the multiple opinions in Chazal and in Halacha were pointed at to and made fun of or ridiculed by both the Karaites and the Christians. How can you say your Torah is from God? You've got so many different opinions. That's Ad Kan for the Sfardim. Okay, I hope we can make this. Ashkenazim, whole nother world. Whole nother world. Rashi and Ksubis, that's where we'll start. Rashi and Ksubis says as follows. V'ikala meimar, and one could say, what does mean elu ve'elu devar elokim chayimin? Heim zimnim nishai chaytaima, zim nishai chaytaima. Sometimes you should say this way, sometimes you say that way, and they're both okay. Shatam mitapech levishinu advarim mishinim mat. Because the applicability can change depending on the circumstances. Means that both sides, it's not why right or wrong, both sides are right.
Sometimes.
But if it's right, sometimes it's right. In other words, it can't. It's not black and white. It's not black and white. It's not black and white ever. I mean, so if it was a matter of yes or no, you couldn't say I can rely on the wrong. I'm going to rely on a sheker now. I mean, it doesn't work. Now, the Rush finessed this a little bit on page 3. He said, "Quotes Rabbeinu Tam." There is a machlokus in the Gemara. When was the world created? Was the world created in Nisan or the world was created in Tishrei? So, Omer Rabbeinu Tam. De'elu ve'elu divrei elokim chayim. They're both right. Ve'ikla meimar, one can say, de'betishrei Allah b'machshav alivarot, that God thought about creating the world in Tishrei, but he didn't finish it, or he didn't do it till Nisan.
Not really.
Forget about, wait, I'm sorry, what?
Really, you got two things being true. It's like explaining it away.
Exactly, exactly. One way of dealing with elu ve'elu is with any contradiction is to say it's not really a contradiction. You have to understand it's a dialectical resolution. You explain it away by saying this refers to this and this refers to that. There really isn't a contradiction. Correct. But you can't get away with that when there's a head-on collision when he says asr and he says mutter. He says tameh and he says tahar. Okay? So how do Ashkenazim deal with that? So here, this answer is best known from the Ritva, but we'll see the original source. Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim, he says in Ervin. Sha'alu Rabbanei Tzorfat. So who is Rabbanei Tzorfat? The Ritva lives in the 14th century. He's here quoting a whole line of Bali Tzorfas going all the way back to the 12th century. And he writes as follows. Hey'ach efshar sheyu shneihem divrei Elokim chayim. They can't both be right. It's like the old joke about the rabbi, right? There two guys come to the rabbi, and the rabbi, and one guy says X. He says, you're right. And the other guy says, no, he's wrong. Why? He says, you're right. So the Rebbetzin says, can't be like that. Can't be he's right and he's right. She says, you're also right. So that's a joke, but we'll see that actually based on something deeper. Hey, achev shashu shnehem devrei Elokim chayim. V'zeu ser v'ze matir. So they brought a medrash. Ki kishalam mushalam marom lekabel Torah. Herulo al bashamayim. Herulo al kol davar v'davar memtet panim liisur memtet panim laeter. He got up to Yeshiva Shomala. Every single shayla in Torah, there were 49 ways to argue one way, 49 ways to argue the other way. So Moshe sees this. He says, in Hebrew, it's a chashchu einav. He's going to shfarz in the oigen. He said, I can't deal with this. V'sha'al HaKadosh Baruch Hu alzeh. He says, how's this going to work? I mean, everything is right. You're right. V'amar sheyeheze masur lechachmei Yisrael shebechol dor vador v'yeh hachra'a kemotam. He says, no, you're right. Both sides are correct. You will decide which one you want to choose. In other words, the right of hachra'a between the both correct answers is up to you. Then he says, "V'nachon al piadrush," but there's a Kabbalistic reason or a deeper reason. In other words, the implication is that there are multiple truths in heaven, and it's so elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim means you're both Torah, both results are credible, both results are legitimate. However, your obligations, because you can't live like that, which is Moshe Rabbeinu's question, is to you're going to have to develop a methodology and take and have the gumption to decide which one is applicable in which case. Okay? Now that reflects beautifully what Rashi said, where he said sometimes it works here and sometimes it works there, and you have to know how to, in other words, it's not a question of theoretical physics, it's a question of applied physics. Where does this come from? This comes from a Midrash Tilim. Medrash Tilim is a medrash which was written in Eretz Yisrael. Now, whether this goes back to Eretz Yisrael Bavel or not is a whole question. But anyway, says the medrash, Amar Rabbi Yanai, lo nitna divrei Torah chatichim. In other words, the Torah is not given cut and dry. Ela al kol dibur shaya omer kadosh baruch hu lemoshe, haya omer, God would say, God himself would say, memtet panim tahor, memtet panim tameh. Amar lefanav, Moshe Rabbeinu said to him, Ribono shel Olam, ad matai na'amod al beiru shel davar. When are we going to figure out what's what? What's clearly what, which way to go? Amar le acharei rabim lahatot. You decide by majority. That's Sanhedrin, that's how it works. Rabu mitamim tameh, rabu mitarim tahor. Rabbi Abahu, and in fact, this sort of multiplicity of approaches, he said, is inherent to the system. Rabbi Abahu b'shem Rami Yonatan Amar, Talmid batik hayalo Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva had a serious Talmud. Rabbi Meir Shmo. Vayam etaheret asheretz ma'atorah b'mem tet panim tahor u'b'mem tet panim tameh. He could actually do the opposite. He was so sharp, Rabbi Meir, that he could actually argue that something which is obviously one way is actually the other way. Now, there may very well be an element of criticism here. In the sense that sometimes you can be too high, you can be too, you know, smart and a half, too, you know, what's the word, measure and a half too smart. Because in general, in fact, Rabbi Meir was so sharp that we generally don't paskin like him. Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi amar, tinokot shayu b'mei Shaul v'David v'mei Shmuel, hayudim lodim lidrosh et haTorah b'mem tet panim tahor, mevetet panim tameh. But to be able to argue either side of an argument, that's a valid activity within the level of Torah. In other words, Basham. How the opposites come together, I don't know. But they're already inherent in the Torah and in heaven. So Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim means A, that they're both valid Torah opinions, you just have to choose practically. And B, it means machloket is not a bad thing, it's inherent. Now there's an irony that comes out of this. What Ashkenazim do to the Sephardic codes, where they try, which were attempted to bring unity, is they tack on all kinds of comments to add Ashkenazi practices, but that basically undermines what they were written for in the first place. So when I was a kid, I was told, isn't it a wonderful thing? We have Shulchan Aruch, and we have the Ramah added, the Mapa added his comments, which, by the way, he never really comes down on any. He comes down sometimes on a side, but he says, we do this way, some do this way, Yeshno again, da da da. It's always multiple opinions, even when he adds. He said, but the irony with the Ramah, so he said, so I was told as a little kid that we have the Shulchan Aruch, and comes the Ramah, and he put the Mapa, and made the book accessible and relevant for all of Jewry. It's very nice, but he did it by undermining the original purpose of the book in the first place, was to provide uniformity. Okay? Anyways, Rav Soloveitchik, many times said that at least, you know, he was of the opinion that in general, this whole idea that that it's either or in terms of halachic opinions, he says is not true. He disagrees with the Chida and all these others. He said that you have to realize that there are different types of logic. There is binary logic, N logic, which is in the technical term, meaning that something cannot be both A and not A, which is what we've seen up until now. There's also something called multi-valued logic. This is something which I learned from the late Professor Barth Brody, who was a phenomenal mind and a wonderful gentleman and a tremendous Talmud Chacham and medical ethicist and all kinds of things. There's such a thing as multi-value logic, that sometimes in our phenomenal world, many values can coexist and interact against each other. How does that work? Okay, so Adkan, Professor Brody. And that's what the Rav assumed was true. That's why you have to spend as much time learning Abaye as Rav, even though we paskin like Rav. Otherwise, why just study Rav? Now the Chida would say what? You study Abaye so you understand Rav better because Abaye is wrong. The Rav said, no, they're both equally valid and equally convincing. In fact, I remember once we were learning, I think, Tanis, and there's machlokas, the beginning of Tanis between Rav and Rav Chisda. And we spent like a week, 2 weeks, studying Rav Chisda. In this case, we started passing like Rav. Rav said, I don't know what I'm going to do. We said, such a good job with Rav Chisda, I don't know what I'm going to do with Rabbah, even though we passed like Rabbah against Rav Chisda in this case. Why spend all that effort? Because they're equally valid, even though we passed one way. How does that come together? First of all, such an opinion is much more liberating. But I think there's an interesting hint how the Ashkenazim, at least classical Ashkenazim, actually understood it. At one point, I did a lot of research trying to follow up all the usage of this medrash in classical in the literature of Rashi and those came before him and Bali Tosfos, and it pops up all over the place. I mean, this is a formative medrash, and this was really the grund norm, the basic norm of Hashkafat Olam for classical Ashkenazim. I found it in a very strange place. There is a piyut that is recited on Parshas Parah that is preserved and commented on in a manuscript that was published. I'm going to blow you away. I'm not going to blow you away. It's a manuscript from Hungary. In a Hungarian library now, but it was published in a book, and it's not Hungary, it's Hamburg. It's Hamburg, sorry. Anyways, and I was looking at the commentary on this piyut, and in the context of that piyut, there's an allusion, clear allusion, to this medrash. And so, what's the connection? What's the connection? What would be possible connection? Why Parshas Parah? What does paraduma do? It's metame as a tahor and metahir as a tame. In other words, opposite coalesce in the paraduma. It is the ultimate enigma in the Torah. It's where the opposites come together and coexist. Clearly, the Ashkenazim said that somewhere in God, all of this comes together and coexists. And just like paraduma is the one thing that we really, that nobody gets a handle on. It's a terrible expression I hate, but I'll use it in this case. It's one of these things. It's the one thing we can't wrap our heads around, right? Don't you hate that? I hate that. I really hate it. But anyway, you get the point. It's the one thing we can't, we sit there and say, you know, at some stage of the ballgame, you say, I just don't understand. I'll accept God's, if God says so, it's fine. So the same thing over here. So at some stage of the ballgame, it comes together. I don't know how, but in our phenomenal world, opposites are able to coexist. The Maharshal takes, so I think that's how, at least that's how in time of Bali Tosfos they dealt with this. It certainly teaches intellectual humility, as I said before. The Maharshal, Rabbi Shlomo Luria in the 16th century, notches it up takes it up one notch. In the introduction, the Maharshal was the first cousin of the Ramah. He was 10 years older than he was. And he didn't believe in codes at all. He thought codes were terrible. He thought codes were, he was totally against codes. What did he think? He think for every single thing, you should start with the Gemara and you should work all the way through all the Rishonim and the early Achronim and then come to a decision. And he decided he's going to write a commentary on the entire Shas in which he's going to do that. And he got through seven Masechtas. He got through seven Masechtas, eight Masechtas. But the point is, that was his idea because he thought that every single Shiloh should be dealt with from the beginning. In the introduction to his book, which is called Yamshel Shlomo, he writes as follows: Shlomo alav shalom amar b'chokhmato v'yoter mehema b'ni hizaher asot svarim harbe ein ketz. Okay, he says in Shlomo in Kohelet it says don't get too many books. V'darshu rabotenu b'perikos in pasin. The Gemara in Erevin says shemechuyav hu lishmo divrei chachamim shenikreu sofrim. In other words, you shouldn't rely on books. You should rely on live tradition from rabbis. What are you supposed to listen from them? B'mech chidshuv osifu kabbalatam b'torah shebal peh halacha l'moshe misinai al torah shebichtav. The only authoritative way to be able to understand torah shebichtav is based on torah shebal peh. Shehu b'tachlit akitzur b'kamud baruch b'ichut. The Torah is very styptic. It's very limited, and the Torah Shebal Peh expands it. Be'af hosifu and Chazal also hosifu v'gazru v'asu mishmeret l'mishmeret. All kinds of rabbanon, takanos, gzeros, kasher hikdim hachacham hazeh shasa oznaim l'Torah, and so on. Achshav. V'kol nimtza b'divrei chachmei Torah mimod rasher Rabbeinu alav shom arata hein hachachamim sha'amara hu alehem divrei chachamim or divrei chachamim kadar banot, that the words of the sages are multifaceted and from them we learn. Now watch. Kulam nitnu miroe echad. They all come from one shepherd. Either God via Moshe Rabbeinu from God, whoever the roe is. So therefore, one would therefore think there's one Torah, one God, one Moshe Rabbeinu, one Torah. No. V'shelo litmoa al machloktam b'richu kadeot. And don't be amazed, don't be surprised by the fact that there are many machlokot here, which are polar. Polar machlokot, b'richu kadeot, from here to there. Shezem itamei v'zet mitaher, ze oser v'zem matir, ze posel v'zem machshir, ze poter v'zem mechayev, ze merachek v'zem mekarev. One team says something far away or maybe off the wall, and one team was reasonable, and the other guy thinks the opposite. Im da'atam l'shem shamayim, it's all okay. Varishonim afilu bevat kol lo ayu mashkichim. They didn't mention to heavenly voices coming out because it's all here. V'kulam divrei Elokim chayim ki ilu kibel kol chad mipi agvura umipi Moshe. It's as if everybody heard this to the Torah directly from Moshe, from God, and from Moses. Ha'af shelo yatzad davar mipi Moshe l'olam. Even though even though Moses never said this, some of this stuff, we derive it from what he said and passed on and everything which developed subsequently. So therefore, it's an authoritative and learned the proper way in terms of method. It's an authority. It's a legitimate extension of the original revelation. In other words, kol ma shetalmid ad batika tid l'chadesh, doesn't mean Moshe Rabbeinu knew it. It meant that it was always in potential there in terms of the overall combination of the methodology, Torah Shel Peh and the Chumash. Liyot shnei apachim benosei echad. Not a problem. V'af al pichein dimu hachachamim l'rovi shiro v'chizko she'en devar shotzi miseichel apoel. Okay, I'm going to jump a little bit. Skip to the last three words. To the end of the third, next to last line. V'hamekubalim katvu tam l'davar. How does this work? He quotes the Kabbalists. I got to understand, for the Marshal to quote Mekubalim is very weird, or it's a little strange, because he doesn't like any, there's one guy, he has a tshuva in which a guy comes and he wants to change a certain minhag because it says so in the Zohar, and he ranks him out and he screams at him and yells at him, we don't know anything about the Zohar. But here he quotes the Mekubalim. V'hamekubalim katvu tam l'davar. Lefisha kol haneshamot hayu bahar Sinai of all the generations, v'kiblu derech arba'im v'teisha tzinorot, v'hen sheva pa'amim shiva, mizukak shivatayim, v'hen akolot asher shamu v'gam ra'u. Every single Jew at Har Sinai and all the neshamot from Kol HaTorah were there, everybody heard a different Torah. Now, that doesn't mean everybody heard a different Torah, so tomorrow I can tell you that tomorrow's Treif Day and we can go have shrimps. But it means within the context of overall generation, nuance is an opinion, it's machloket is built in. Because it's common, it's almost like what's called reception theory in literary theory today. It's everything's built in other words, there's a corpus which is whole as its own integrity. But because Lo B'Shamayim Hi, there is a personal take, if it's done properly, which is also legitimate. God wants us to indulge in Milchamta Shel Torah and to try to do our best to be able to understand it the best. And since different people think differently, as a result, there will be multiple opinions, and that's a good thing. You have to pask in some way, so then we're also psak. Okay, in other words, Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. That's wonderful. Halacha kebetila, because you have to pask in. So tradition obliges you to accept the rules of psak. And how that works is because there's a consensus that grows over time, and sometimes the consensus can change, and it's a question of motivation of the motivating factor of the person and the scholarship of the people involved in having opinion. That's a whole other ballgame. But in principle, and logic doesn't work. And logic doesn't work, and you can spend your entire time worrying about an opinion in the Gemara that was rejected halacha lemaaseh, but there's as much as mitzvah Talmud Torah as studying Beit Hillel. Which is the polar obverse of Spain. Now, it's the irony that I can't explain today. I have no idea why. It means that up until recently, Ashkenazim liked anarchy, and Sephardim aimed towards Kechol Shenitan, one kind of truth. Why in the 20th and 21st century it's flipped around, and Ashkenazi poskim tend to be far more dogmatic and Sephardim more open? Not a clue. Not a clue. But that's one of the great ironies of the 20th century. Now, Reb Moshe Feinstein, in his tshuvas, takes a middle ground, which is really striking and it's worth looking at. Reb Moshe, in the introduction to Igus Moshe, lays out his method. It's basically his animamin when it comes to hapsak work. So he says, he starts off by saying that I understand that the process of psak halacha is fraught. That when a rabbi, we've talked about this before also, that when a rabbi accepts a shaila, he's not just answering a question, it's like a lawyer. Can you write this contract, that contract, who's right, who's wrong? All right, besides, if you lose, if the lawyer makes a mistake, and then the mistake, so somebody will get hurt, but you'll pay them back and you'll shake hands and goodbye. If a Rav makes a mistake, he's misrepresenting God's law, and he's causing the person who acts to sin. Now, that's one of the differences between us and the general society. The concept of sin doesn't exist in general society anymore. What we call sin, you go to a therapist, whatever the case might be, we don't take responsibility for things that we do wrong. But by us, if you do a sin, it means you're out of sync with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and you've got another thing to think about in Yom Kippur when we believe that our lives are on the line. And if I'm asked to paskin for somebody else, I'm taking his neshama in my hands. In a sense, I'm more liable than the doctor, because the doctor can kill you in olam haba and olam hazeh, but I can kill you in olam haba. I mean, okay, that's overly dramatic, but that's part of the deal here. So he says. So he points out that this dilemma is already discussed extensively by Chazal. It's already discussed extensively by Chazal, and you have the famous Gemara in I should have put this here actually. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah, it's in Avodah Zarah, it's in Sanhedrin, and so that there's a pasuk in Mishlei, Rabim Chalalim Hipila. Did I mention this? Batsumim Kol Harugah. That somebody caused a lot of people to die, but those who were dead are even greater. What's the pasuk? Rabim Chalalim Hipila Zet Talmid Shelo Higia Lahorah Umore. This is the Rav. This is the Talmud who did not finish his homework and did not finish his studies and did not have the kind of stage he needed and practice, and he paskins anyways. He can kill people by making a mistake. But even more people that die, or more people laid waste by those who know how to paskin, have the qualifications, but they're afraid. Meaning that you should be careful not to be sure you're ready, but once you're ready, you don't have a moral right to withhold Torah and services from the Jewish people who need to know the Derech HaYasher Yelchuba. It's interesting. But the fact that the Gemara expresses in the sense of death is very striking. That's a really extreme formulation. It's a spiritual murder. In fact, the Gra in Kol Eliyahu, the Gra supposedly has, it's attributed to the Gra. There's a cute little vort. He points out that the commandment Lo Tirtzach, I don't remember which is where, but that in one place Lo Tirtzach is written as a patach, and another place it's written with a kamas. So he says this is that Gemara. Sometimes you can commit murder by opening your hand when you're not ready, and sometimes you can commit murder by closing your hand. Anyway, it's cute. Anyway, so Ramesha, after having discussed why you still have a moral obligation if you're qualified to paskin, he says as follows: Aval hu mitam shanachon lani yudati. So it seems to me, I'm convinced. Shahayu rasha'im u'muchuyavim chachmei hadorot harishachron. Oh, so the other issue he asks is, who am I to paskin when there are all these great people who are gone? He says, nevertheless, hayu rasha'im, they were allowed, u'muchuyavim, and obliged, chachmei dorot achronim lahorot. Af shelo hayu nechshavim higia lahora b'dorot chachmei agmara. He says, even though we might be considered, a previous generation might be considered totally unqualified compared to the great ones in the past, the time of the Gemara, sheyesh vaday lachush, of course we have to be concerned, ulai lo kivnu amitut hadin kfishahu haemet klapei shmaya. Says, of course, we have to always worry about the fact that maybe it's not what heaven knows is the absolute truth. But as far as we can do without divine intercession, lo bashamayim hi. So here he's merging the Sephardic and the Ashkenazic position. There is one truth, but we can't always know it as we're God, for whatever reason, left us to our own devices. So we have to do the absolute best we can, with the absolute best kalim we can, and take the chance, and take the hit if we have to. Ela kafi shenir ela achacham acharei shiyen karaui. The karaui is important here. Livarer halacha b'shas uveposkim kafi kocho b'chovid rosh uviyira me'ashem yitbarech v'nirelo shekein upsak hadin hu emet lahora'a. That's the truth as far as hora'a is concerned. Now here, he's very Ashkenazi. He say, if I did my homework, and I'm Yerushalayim, and I'm not motivated by any kind of outside ideology, or whatever the case might be, then and I'm convinced that that's the truth, I'm obliged to take to paskin as my studies lead me. Umechuyav lahorot kein, af in beetzim, even if God sitting on top on high says no, klape shmaya she'enu kein aperush, val kazen ne'emar shegam divarav. Divrei Elokim Chayim, me'achar shelu nireh perush kemoshe pasak, v'lo ayastira lidvarav, v'ikabel schar harato, af she'emet dino keperusha. How do I know this? He says, you see from a Gemara, beginning of Rabbi Lezer de Mila. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. Ir haita be'eretz Yisrael shayu osim k'Rabbi Eliezer. Machlokes Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Kiva, the beginning of Rabbi Eliezer Mila, whether machshirei mitzvah dochin et Shabbat or not. So, for example, bris mila is dochin Shabbos, but how far does that go? So, Rabbi Eliezer said, it's sort of like a big long chadgadya. I would say Rube Goldberg, but you don't know who Rube Goldberg is. It's a whole. Do you know who Rube Goldberg is?
Rube Goldberg.
All right, so you know Rube Goldberg, fine. So it's like, it's a whole long chagadya. He says, you're allowed to cut the wood, to make the fire, to make the coals, to temper the steel, to make the knife, to make the mila. On Shabbos, if you have to. Rabbi Akiva said, he says, there's a difference. Something you could have done before Shabbos, it's not Doichah Shabbos. Something which you have to do now. I mean, you can't do the Mila before Shabbos from the eighth day of Shabbos. You have no choice. So anything which is absolutely must be done on Shabbos is Doichah Shabbos. Anybody thinking before is not Doichah Shabbos. But he says, so according to Rabbi Akiva, where Rabbi Eliezer was allowed is actually Chil Shabbos. That's right. I'm Rabbi Yitzchak, Irach Achat Haita Be'eretz Yisrael, Shorosim K'Rabbi Eliezer, V'natan Lehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu Sachar Gadol, and God rewarded them, even though they were wrong, even though we passed against them, shemetu bizmanan, that they all lived to be over 70, ukishagazra machuta rishag zera lamila, the time of Adrian, lo gazru alo tahair, av shebeemet aliba dedina nifsak shalok Rebbe Lazar, even though we passed him like Rebbe Akiva. Behuchi of skila b'meizin b'chatzis b'shogi, as far as Rebbe Akiva is concerned, they're chayiv, it's a chayiv kares, alma, but this is the place of Rebbe Lazar. And Rabbi Lezer's position is legitimate, even though not more normative. Alma, therefore, but you have to have broad shoulders. Alma da'i met lahora'a, if you're qualified and you take a position, ha'i met lahora'a shemchuyav lahorot v'gam misacher mekabel sachar hu kefi shesovera chacham acharei, you know, b'kol kocho. He's very careful here. Not every tyro, not every talmid shelo igel ora has the right to run in here. But if the person of stature, then he has that right. Avshe met mamash enokin. Vizeu inyan, and that's the source. Kol machlokot rabotenu rishonim vachronim sheze oser vize matir shekol zman shelo nifsak kachad. As long as they what? Oh, now here he throws in another piece, and that is that within the world of the world of psak, there is a concept of sugida alma. There's a concept of consensus that forms around a certain opinion, which at that point takes the alternate opinion and puts it on the shelf. So, for example, on Pesach, we say chametz prohibits everything b'mashahu, right? When you have a soup the size of kineret, you throw in a piece of chametz, goodbye, the whole thing. Yeah, you can't drink from the kineret. That's one of the reasons why it's dumb, but that's one of the reasons people only take water from the aquifer, not from the kineret, because they say, oh, people throw sandwiches in the kineret, and if I have chametz, it's silly. But anyway. Okay. Anyways, that's whether it's min b'mino, min b'eino, mino. Yeah. They shut off the kineret. It's a whole to-do. Listen, many things in Minhag Yerushalayim are very close to Judaism, but not quite. Anyways, I argue. In fact, one of the Minhag Yerushalayim, God forbid somebody dies, Minhag Yerushalayim in the Beit HaKvarot is different than a lot of places, and they always at the end of the Levaya, the guy from the Chevron Kaddish always apologizes. He says, I'm sorry, I hope we treat you well, and so on and so forth, because we buried you in Minhag Yerushalayim, and so on. Now, what he really means is, we treated you with kavod, and so on. But I always think that speaks of apologizing for doing Minhag Yerushalayim, which is so bizarre in so many different ways. Anyways, what's the point? He said, there is this concept of, okay, so that rule of B'mashahu, okay, applies whether it's min b'mino, min b'eino mino. You know what that means, right? Okay. Rabbeinu Tam. Now, generally in Isser V'Heter, min b'mino is batel b'rov, and min b'eino mino is batel b'shishin. Rabbeinu Tam thought, now Rabbeinu Tam was the smartest guy in the 12th century in France. I mean, he could put everybody in his pocket. He thought that you should, at one point, he thought that actually on Pesach too, min b'eino mino should be batel b'shishin even by Chametz. And the Sugi Dalma went against him. So that opinion is no longer legitimate. So there is this consensus which does form in the world of psak. She calls man shelovs nifsak kechad yachol kol echad lahorod bimkomo kemo shesover shadin amiti hu rak keechad mehen ushnei hachachamim mekablim sachar al horatam. ומטעם זה מצינו הרבה חלוקים גם ביסורים חמורים בין מקומות הנהוגים להורות כרמב״ם בבית יוסף ובין המקומות שנהוגים להורות כחכמי התוספות והרמ"א ושניהם הם דברי אלוקים חיים אף שהאמת האמיתי גליה כלפי שמיא שהוא רק כאחד מהם. So Rav Moshe has a middle ground. There's one truth objectively in the world, but the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us room to be able to act on our own without interfering. And our obligation is to try to do the best we possibly can, and that's what Elo Ve'er Gevel. So he basically combines the two positions. Okay. Ad kan.